Okay. So we have come a long way. We are at day 18 now. And we're roughly 70% done with the course. Somewhere around there. Something between 60 and 80%. Okay. Understand why Newton's method works so well, and it'll also give us some insight into why sometimes it doesn't work so well. Okay. So your homework 15 that you were doing was the bisection method, right? Which is a very reliable method. If you have a continuous function and it's positive in one place and negative in another place, then it's zero somewhere in between. And the bisection method will find it to whatever accuracy you want. Or it'll find at least one of the solutions, maybe many. And you know, every step, you're guaranteed that the distance to a true solution is cut in half. So for, why don't we pick something a little... Let's look at this function. It's continuous, and let's say I want to find a root. I think there's probably going to be like three roots or something, but let's see. I kind of rigged it so that if I did it right, there'll be a root between 0 and 1. Let's see if I did it right. Somewhere between 0 and 2. I'll go ahead and write 1. And then I'll write 2. So negative 1 to the 5th plus 2 times 1 plus 3 is 4. Okay, so there's no guarantee of a root here in between 0 and 1. Let me go out a little further. What about f of negative 1? And the other way, we'll make a slightly bigger table of values. I'll do negative 2, negative 1. I already did 0 and 1. Let's also look at 2. So we get some more information here. Negative 2. So that would be 32, well, negative 32, fifth power. Negative number is negative. And then negative of that, so positive 32 plus 4 plus 3. So 39. And then negative 1. Okay, negative 1 to the 5th is odd power, so negative 1. Negative of that is 1. And then over here, we have positive 1, then minus 2 from the negative 1. So 1 minus 2 is negative 1 plus 3 is 2. I already did 0. I did 1. Let's see about 2. Maybe here we'll finally get it. candidate a sign change. I know there's going to be a sign change because I know that if I make X really large, the X to the fifth term dominates. So if X is large and positive, this should be, this quantity should be large and negative. So I know if I keep going with big positive numbers, it's going to turn negative eventually because this negative term here will grow faster than the other stuff as X gets away from zero. So 2, negative of, or opposite of 2 to the fifth. So negative 32 plus 2 times 2, 4 plus 3. So negative 32 plus 7, 5. Okay. Bisection method would you start with 1, 2. Then what's next? Two cases. Well, since this is negative, right, if f of 2 is negative, if 1.5, the midpoint, was positive, then there would be a sign change between 1.5 and 2. So you'd shrink your interval down to this if f of 1.5 was positive. Because then there would still be a sign change between here and here. On the other hand, you could shrink to, if f of 1.5 is negative, then since f of 1 is positive, we would shrink to this interval, get a sign change. Just repeat as needed. So I guess repeat until the interval is as small as you want. So that's subjective, right? It depends on the application. If you need 6 digits, then you need to make this smaller than 10 to the 6. Or at least smaller than 2 times 10 to the 6 so that you can use the midpoint. So you're talking 1 over 500,000, Anyways, when you quit at some interval a, b, if you didn't find the root exactly, right? I mean, if 1.5 is an exact root, then we would quit. Of course, but if we never find an exact root, then you just give up at some really narrow interval, then your best guess is I guess we just go with the midpoint of that interval, right? That's how the bisection method goes. It, given bounds, it always, for the root being between one and the other, it always guesses the middle. And eventually you run out of time. You have to stop, with this, guess the middle and then split to a subinterval thing. But until then, you just keep going, right? So in this case, you start out with 2 minus 1, right? So after n
workings, is that a word? Or should I write havings? Whatever. Your interval will have been cut in half n times. So, if we started here, we would get that much smaller. So that's how narrow things would be. And then this thing here is in the midpoint of that. Okay. So this whole distance is 2 minus 1 over 2 to the n. So in between, you have another factor by basically going to the middle that one more time. Okay, for each of those lengths. Okay, and so there's a root within distance. In this case, we started with the interval 1 to 2, so after n stages, if you give up and just go to the midpoint, you get a root within distance 2 minus 1 over 2 to the n plus 1 of your final guess. Some good experience with that in your homework, seeing how this works in practice. For a root, you just say A is a lower bound, B is an upper bound, which is more like what I asked on homework, right? Yeah. If somebody just wants a best guess, then you just pick something in between your lower and upper bounds, and the simplest choice would be the midpoint. You could do slightly more sophisticated guesses using a linear interpolation or something like that, but we don't need to go into that right now. I mean, this is like the simplest method and the most reliable method for finding approximate roots of continuous functions. Newton's method is faster but less reliable. First of all, it doesn't even work if your function is not sufficiently differentiable. You want to have a second derivative. And in fact, you want the second derivative to be continuous. So, all right. But when it does work, you will get a much faster convergence than this. The catch is, even when the second derivative is continuous, that's still not a guarantee that it's going to work. You have to start close enough to an actual root for it to work. But generally speaking, if you start close enough to an actual root with Newton's method, then it'll converge to it really fast. So maybe you use a bisection method to get close, and then if you want to get really close, now that you're at a reasonable starting place, then you hit it with Newton's method. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is talk about that. How does this work? First, we talk about what is the method. It's a topic that you might have seen in Calculus 1, but it's usually an optional topic, so you may not have seen it. Has anybody seen Newton's method before?
No.
Or
you don't want to admit it. You might be afraid I'll ask you what it is. All right, so the intuition behind it is very simple. So like, we have our funny graph here. We're not sure exactly what's going on between, you know, say 1 and 2. We'd have to plot a lot more points. But we have some limited information. I got that 4 and that negative 25. So let's see. If I make that 4, then I need to go about 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. Okay, well, way down there would be negative 25. Okay. So something happens in between there. If I remember my calculus 1 stuff, I could at least take the second derivative and see if it's concave up or concave down. So the second derivative is, well, the first derivative is negative 5 times x to the 4 plus 2. And then the derivative of that would be negative 5 times 4, which is 20, times x to the 3 plus nothing. Okay, so if x is positive, the second derivative would be negative. So it's concave down. Okay, so I should make my picture look concave down. Okay, so something like that. We have to graph it. We could use a lot of points to get a, you know, more accurate graph. This is just my imagination of how a concave down function going between these two points might look. Okay, so the idea is, here's the root. I'll call the root C. There may be many roots, but let's suppose there's one of them. And in my picture, there's just one for simplicity. So the principle is, if you have a starting point that you're guessing at, you want to pretend the function is a straight line. So like here, you could look at the tangent line. And if you imagined, my function is a straight line, then you would draw the straight line, and you would think that you should go here, right? Which is, you know, maybe even worse than just guessing one. But if you were closer to the true root, like if you were here, right, then guessing the tangent line seems like it might make things a little better. Kind of the idea is start here, then go up to the graph, then go down along the tangent line to back to the x-axis. Right. 1, 2, 3. And then like if I start at 1 in my first picture, stage 1, then I go up, stage 2, then I follow the tangent line down back to the x-axis. If I start even closer, right, then it looks like this. And it looks like that one is an actual improvement. But I had to start pretty close, and it's getting hard to see. Here's another one. Maybe I start here. What if I started here? Okay. Now I have to go down to here, to that point. So 1, 2. And then I would have to follow the tangent line, which is very steep here. It goes up something like this. So I would end up somewhere around here. I'm not sure exactly where. Okay. So depending on whether the function is negative, you either have to go up to the graph or go down to the graph. And then you follow the tangent line back to the x-axis to get a new point. So you think of it as a sequence of guesses, right? So think of yourself as, so think of this as a point, okay? Not an interval, but a point in the plane. Okay, so from some guess, you imagine your x value, go to the corresponding point on the graph. So just go straight up or straight down. Down to the x-axis along the tangent line. Well, what is the tangent line, right? You gotta remember your point-slope formula, right? Think back to calculus one. Y minus the y value, f of xn, has to equal the slope, the tangent, times x minus xn. Okay? So we want to get back down to a y value of 0. So we want to have 0 minus f of xn equals f prime of xn. And we're going to call the x-coordinate that we arrive at the new or the next guess. Okay? So given your nth kind of improved guess, you make it even better by following the tangent line. Or at least you hope it gets better. As my picture shows, sometimes if you don't start close enough to the root or there's something weird about the function, like say it doesn't have a continuous second derivative, then it could get worse. Even for a polynomial, if you start too far away from the root, you know, applying Newton's method could make things worse. They might get better later if you use the method enough times, but sometimes it just makes things worse. But okay, so kind of a little bit of algebra remains here to solve for the. We need a formula for the new guess, but it's not hard to solve for that. We can do a little algebra. Divide both sides by the f prime. If f prime is 0, we're going to be in trouble. So we're going to need to not only start near the root, but we're going to want to be in a part of the graph where the first derivative is never 0. A horizontal tangent line will kill us, right? If your tangent line is horizontal, you can follow it as far as you want. You'll never hit the x-axis. So this better not be 0. That would be a big problem. Anyways, do the algebra, and you get this formula. And if you do get a horizontal tangent line, start over and try again with a different starting value or something. Or go back one step and modify your last guess a teensy bit. And hope that with a slight modification, you'll hit something that's not quite a horizontal tangent. So, yeah. Potentially very fast, as we'll see, but delicate. Very particular about it. All right. But why don't we try it with, say, function here. Let's get a feel for it, and then we'll see if we can. Then I'll talk about how to prove that under the right circumstances, this actually will work really well. Okay. So why don't I know it's between 1 and 2. So why don't I just start in the middle? Okay. And keep
keep the function as it is. See what happens. What's the worst thing that could happen?
Okay. So, we'll need the derivative, right? I said it verbally.
I'll write it down.
Negative 5x to the 4 plus 2.
Write x to 0.
You want to start with some number like n equals 1 or 0. I like to have my sequences start with 1 as the index, at least in this class. So there we go. Sorry about that. Start somewhere, and then at any later stage, you're using the same recipe to go to the next stage.
Okay, so here will be our formula. Okay, so we have a starting value, and then we're just going to use this formula and hope it never gives us a division by zero. Calculator, I can give my calculator a formula in terms of an x, and then tell it to use that formula to replace the value of x, and I can just hit the enter key again and again and iterate it. So let me see here. So first, I need to store 1.5 in x. I'm in T89 here, and then what I want is to have exactly this formula. So x minus x to the fifth. Well, this is all going to be in parentheses, right? So we need two parentheses here. X minus parentheses, both open parentheses, x to the fifth, negative x to the fifth, plus 2x plus 3, close parentheses, divided by, open parentheses, negative 5x to the fourth, plus 2, close parentheses for the denominator, close parentheses for the whole fraction, which is coming after a minus sign, and store all that in x. And my calculator says that, well, my calculator didn't spit out division by zero or anything, so that's promising. Okay, so I must be, my hunch is I'm reasonably close to the root then. And that's, my calculator is only willing to give me 12 significant figures, so that's all we're going to get. Decimal approximations. My calculator may be introducing a little bit of rounding error here, so you might want to take the last digit with a grain of salt. Sometimes it shows fewer digits than before because it thinks that the digit after the 8 is, say, a 0. 3, 4, 8. Yeah. My calculator doesn't explicitly show me 0. I guess it has. I think I can tell it to do that some other time. Okay. Okay, look at that. From my starting guess, I just made 5 applications. I already got the same number twice in a row. Okay. So that means there's no point in repeating because it's just going to spit back this number As far as the 12-digit precision my calculator is concerned, it's found the root. Okay? 12 significant figures, technically. So this is probably less than 10 to the minus 11, away from a root. So that's pretty good, right? Imagine trying to get to 10 to the minus 11 using our algorithm over here, right? Take a lot more steps. Right. I'd hit it with some logarithms, maybe simplify it a little bit. Right, because that's a 1, so it's just a reciprocal. Take a logarithm of both sides and you get that. And let me kill those minus signs. So just flip the inequalities. Now I can finally solve for n. So n, I'll divide by log of 2. Log of 2 is a positive number, so it's not going to flip things. Anything bigger than 1 has a positive logarithm. Okay, so this will be greater than 11 times the log of 10 divided by the log of 2, and then I need to subtract off that 1. Let's see what that is. These are something. So I would need 36. I would need to go to, number 36. I would have to cut my interval from 1 to 2 in half 36 times to get something as precise as what Newton's method gave me in just 6 trials. You can also see kind of a pattern. Oops, let me rewrite the x1 up here. Right? Now you'll notice that here they agree. Look at where that first digit where they disagree. They disagree right there. So like, and then now they disagree here. Now the first digit of disagreement is over here. And now it's somewhere out there. The usual pattern for Newton's method is that once you get close enough to the root, every time you apply the method one more step, the number of decimal places of accuracy roughly doubles. Okay? So if this is like 11 decimal places correct, then if my calculator could do more digits, then this next guess would probably be about 20 decimal places correct. Okay, so it's really fast when it does work. Okay, because the error gets squared approximately each time. So like if you have an error of 10 to the minus 11, the square of that is 10 to the minus 22. That's why I said that this one would probably have about 20 digits of precision if my calculator could actually compute that many digits.
So that's the sales pitch for Newton's method.
You said question. About when it works.
So when it works.
Does it not always work?
Doesn't always work. Sometimes, like you see in my picture, right? Sometimes it could throw you way off course, right? And you might eventually come back, but it could take a lot of steps. You need your curve to be reasonable. And as we'll see, we can prove that continuous second derivative and non-zero first derivative and being close enough to a root is reasonable. But yeah, you got to start close enough. I mean, those are the kind of problems. If you start too far away, you can have this kind of problem where you get sent further away. Like, I guess we start at one, you might go way out here, which is worse than just guessing one. So you want to start close enough, and how close is close enough depends on the function. You also want to avoid horizontal tangent lines. That would be the division by zero. And the way we prove I think of this, the way we understand why it works as often as it does is just by using the mean value theorem kind of twice in a row, as you'll see. So I'll walk through a proof of some sufficient conditions for making it work. I mean, trying to decide exactly when it works and when it doesn't is, a really complicated problem, and no one has a general solution. But we can sort of mark out safe regions, so to speak, like saying if you have such and such, then we know it'll work for sure. Some really weird stuff can happen, especially if you're dealing with, say, the complex plane instead of just the real line, where you can have stuff where, like, there's multiple roots and it wanders around, but getting close to but never quite reaching multiple roots, and it kind of never settles down. There's all sorts of crazy stuff that can happen. And people have made actually a lot of beautiful pictures of applying Newton's method in the complex plane. You can use this exact same formula, just with complex numbers. And you can try a bunch of different starting points and see what happens at each of those starting points, and then make some kind of table using some kind of color codes for, like, how fast did it converge, to what root did it converge, stuff like that. It makes some very pretty pictures. Maybe I'll email something like that or post it to Angel. Obviously, I mean, I said the word Newton's method. You can look up Newton's method in a textbook or even Wikipedia and find lots of stuff beyond what I have time for in this class. Okay, chart. There's a chunk. All right. Okay. Root C. All right. So we'll start with these assumptions. We may need to add more assumptions along the way to make sure that something doesn't go wrong. Okay. All right. So the first thing I need to do is I want to basically represent f as a quadratic function, at least approximately. Okay. So my first claim is and let's assume that
for the sake of simplicity, let's see. I have something that's not. So we're at stage N. We want to go to the next stage, okay? And we have, assume we haven't found it exactly, right? We found it exactly, and we'd quit, right? Okay. Now there's, I mean, there's often two symmetrical cases, right? Let's suppose that our guess is a little bit too high, right? It's a little bit easier for me to write this and a little easier to follow if I assume, if I pick out one or the other, greater or lesser. Because now I can talk about the interval from C to Xn, as opposed to, well, it's either C to Xn or it's Xn to C, and having to write down, you know, essentially the same thing twice all the time. All right. So, my first claim is that there exists a something in between C and Xn. Maybe I shouldn't call it Y. Let's call it B. Okay. There's something between C and Xn such that F of C equals F of Xn plus F prime of Xn times X minus C plus 1/2 F double prime. Now here it's going to be that number B. That's what I meant by kind of a quadratic approximation. I think of it as like there's this distance to C that I'm interested in, and I want to represent. I know that this is zero, right? Zero is F of C, and I want to think of having kind of a parabola. If my function is an actual parabola, then this is, then this would be exactly true, and there would be a unique number. It wouldn't matter which v you picked; it would always come out the same because the f double prime would be constant. Okay. So you have to prove this with a mean value theorem. Use it twice. So, first of all. You use the mean value theorem to get something between C and Xn such that F prime A equals F of Xn minus F of C over Xn minus C. Right. The mean value theorem applied once. Now what I'd like to do after that is rewrite it kind of more matching this. Okay. So solve this for F of C. So F of C will be, switch these around.
change that. Sorry about that. This one, it doesn't matter, but. It's going to look less, I think it's less ugly this way. And, yeah, this one, yeah, it has to be this way for this one. It was wrong before. So I didn't have a choice there. I had to fix it. Okay, solve this for f of c now, and you get f of xn plus f prime of a times c minus xn. Picture of what's going on here. So, okay, so maybe so we know it's zero here. Okay, and then, for example, maybe you know, it goes down like this. For example, maybe the graph goes negative. And then, what have I done here? Mean value theorem says, okay, you get a line, and then there's a point A with the parallel tangent line. That's the mean value theorem part. Now, what I want to deal with now is kind of the difference between those two things. Right? That's what I want to deal with. So I'm going to make a, I'm going to have a function that deals with that. Okay. So let's make that more precise. Okay, so we have this kind of line here. You could make a general formula for it. Put it, I'll use the input variable t. L of t would be, so using point slope, it'll be you know, the f of c there, which is just zero, plus the slope, f prime of a, times what? Times t f of t is just this. Okay. So we're going to look at that difference. And g of, say, xn. Xn minus L of Xn. But as you can see in my picture, that should be zero, right? And you can check it with the algebra. Right? Because the way we picked F prime of A here, this has to equal f of xn. So this is kind of like something to do before. And hopefully I don't get the proof wrong here. So, okay, so now by MVT again, or if you like, by Rolle's theorem again. Okay.
have your function g, then you know there's a horizontal tangent in there. The G here is kind of nice because if you graph it, looks like this. Then what you'd like to do
a little more trickery. What you want to get next is a function h that, like g, has a zero there, but then you want it to come back down. Okay? So you want to kind of mess around with g, so to speak, about breaking the horizontal tangent property. So this was at xn. I want to have something like this. So now h of c and h of xn are zero, but like g, I also want to have a horizontal tangent line at zero. So how can I do that? Have to modify, use a little trick here, so what do you need? You just need to subtract off a function. So let's say that something like this. So here's c. Right. You just need to subtract off a parabola that goes through there.
The other thing I'm wondering is, just multiply by.
You might end up with a horizontal tangent here to it.
So that factor will make h of xn 0. And then by multiplying by this t minus c factor twice, you're definitely going to make h of c 0. And what about the derivative at xn that I'm concerned about here? So, okay, so h prime of t, just use the product rule, g prime of t times t minus c squared plus the other part of the product rule, g of t times 2 times t minus c. Using a very mild form of the chain rule there. Alright? Now, plug in, say, xn. And this term, the g prime of xn, is 0. Okay. And then the g of xn is 0. Right? So the h of xn is 0 since g of xn is equal to 0. And then the h prime of xn is equal to 0 since both g of xn and g prime of xn. Now I use the mean value theorem twice. I just had to get the right function. Okay. So the idea is with this H here, since it's zero here and here, you should get a horizontal tangent line here.
Okay. That's just Rolle's theorem. Zero here, and H prime is also zero here. Okay. So in between, the derivative of H prime should also be zero. Okay. So in other words, think about it this way. Here it's concave up, here it's concave down. There has to be an inflection point, as they say in Calculus 1, in between. Okay? That's all we're doing with using Rolle's theorem twice.
Okay. And that's the point we need to look at. Okay? So if you look at what H double...
So its second derivative is zero. So this is just f double prime of t. This is going to be f prime of t minus... So the first derivative of L is just the slope of L, which is f prime of xn. F of t minus, and I'm just going to plug in my definition for L, which is doesn't work, I'll fix it and do it right on Monday. There's supposed to be a lot of cancellations. We'll see if I'm right about that. Yeah, okay, I'm definitely not going to finish this in time. So good. So this is interesting stuff. I'll spend another day on it if I need to, because I want to explain it right. Streamline it.
The algebra was harder than I expected there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm worried that I did something wrong here, because it's supposed to come out nicer. Next time. Change the schedule a little bit, but I'll get it right. Doing here is basically a baby form of the Taylor's theorem. I got hung up in the proof of it.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.